I'm ready.
Swallowed by a whale.
Okay, we're gonna go ahead and get work session started. It is 6:01. Today is Tuesday, March 6th, and we're meeting here in Seville's Community Center. And it looks like today on our agenda for work session, we're gonna be going into closed session, so if somebody would like to make a motion for that. I'll make that motion.
Denise.
It's.
Denise, we're changing the.
It's actually gonna be for litigation, not competency.
Oh, okay. So, where's the litigation? Imminent litigation, okay. So I move that we go into closed session pursuant to Utah Code, UC 52-4-205(1)(c), to discuss pending or reasonable imminent litigation. All right, thank you. I have a motion by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Councilmember Ellsworth. Let's see, all in favor, do you roll call vote?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's voting?
Let's see, I'll vote. Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
All right, that is unanimous, and we will go to closed session. Bye. So we are now back in our regular work session. So we don't have anything else on our work session that we need to talk about specifically, so is there anything on the regular agenda that you would like to maybe prep council for, or councils are gonna be, that you would like some information on before we go into council meeting? I'd like to plan on being finished with work session by about quarter till.
Just questions or feedback on the municipal waste?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good one to start off. So as you know, our contract with Waste Management was up, is up at the end of April this year. There's no provision in it for an extension. We're actually entering the last time of our extension, so I felt like it was important for us to go out to bid. So we went out to bid. The bid was hosted through SyQuest, which is the Utah State. They field all the questions, and then they send it to the city. They're really good auditors of the RFP. And we got, no surprise, the three biggest municipal waste collectors in the state to respond: Waste Management, Republic, and ACE. And they're all qualified to collect garbage in the city and to take it where we need it to go. So really, it comes down to dollars. And where Waste Management is already has their equipment in Cedar Hills, every home already has a Waste Management can. It is obviously cheaper for them to stay in Cedar Hills. The nice thing about this is that they are one of our highest rated services that the city provides. We consistently get very good feedback from our relationship for residents on our Waste Management contract. They're very receptive to resident needs, and they're really easy to work with. And so you see that their new proposal for first and second cans, how we would divide that up. With their new proposal, it would be an increase over the current contract of $11,000 per year. So that comes out to be about 36 cents per household. The Republic and ACE, this is where I feel like Waste Management had obviously has a leg up, is that their costs go up to $78,000 per year. So it's honestly just a hard pill to swallow for no measurable level of service increase, especially where they're doing a very good job. The other really nice thing about Waste Management versus Republic and ACE in the bids is that they're the ones that are saying, we'll come collect the city's dumpsters, the city's cans for free. And that's big. We don't have too many spots that need collection, but we do have a few, so it's saving the city money on that end as well. And they've been really good partners for the Downey Festival Committee. But to that point, Republic has as well. So any questions I can answer on that proposal?
Are they gonna be here today to present like the?
I don't know. We didn't really invite them. Let me read you the language from the RFP. That's a good question. Where the RFP for landscaping, there is a kind of skill set. You might be strong in one area versus another. It's not apples to apples here. The way that we listed it in the RFP, it says on the RFP, it says the city reserves the right to reject any or all proposals in the way of defects or irregularities in the proposal. The city intends that the contract, if awarded, will be awarded within 30 days following the opening of the proposal, which was February 20th. A notice of award will be sent by mail or electronic means to the successful proposer, who should immediately submit all required bonds, evidence, and insurance and execute a contract with the city. So we're just saying we're going to notify them who we did.
Okay.
So.
These are obviously boring. They just put it in.
Yeah. We didn't invite them. There may be people here. You're welcome to ask them questions, but that wasn't something that we pushed them to or asked them.
Seems obvious. I don't want to spend $65,000 more year on that. My conclusion.
Yeah. But I mean, we did our RFP a little bit different this time. So you notice there's two proposals that they made. One was for the city to own the cans at the end of the proposal, the other one to not. I see benefits to owning the cans, but the other side of the coin is I see definite cons to owning the cans as well. Where we don't own the cans, we swap out easily. It's old provider, please take your cans. With the new provider, will provide cans. We don't have to figure out what we're going to do with all these cans.
Or if they break.
It's a lot of saved labor by law.
Yeah. So I'm inclined to just say let's continue to lease the cans as part of it.
They did a great job replacing mine when somehow I got a 3-foot crack in the side of mine.
Yeah,
and they're out every week. They're collecting a list from the mic person at the front desk about which cans need replacements. And in fact, they were there at the building today.
They do a good job.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on that topic?
Can you maybe share staff's thoughts on the accessory structure?
Yeah, that's a good one to go over it as well.
Kind of the layout, like the purpose, the idea.
We had a resident that wants to build an accessory structure on his property that exceeds 20 feet. Right now, our accessory structure is limited to 20 feet, and that's a little bit lower than a lot of the communities around us with larger lots. This lot is an acre, and it's in the R120,000 zone. So in theory, and this is kind of the genesis.
For like barns and stuff?
Yeah, for like a barn, things like that, hay barn, things like that. In theory, right now, he can build an accessory structure up to 20 feet on his lot. Well, he could split his lot and put a home that's 35 feet, right? So the thought was, well, on these lots that are able to be subdivided, why not allow for an accessory structure to be a little bit taller that then meets main building setbacks? So there's no more of an impact that it would have on the neighbors that are surrounding it than a normal single family home. You see, in fact, let me use the Wardell subdivision, the first item we're going to discuss tonight, as a prime example. This is a lot that is one lot, has two buildings on it, but that second outbound building meets the main setbacks for a main building. And so when he's able to subdivide his lot, he's able to retrofit that building, following the building code, obviously, not the zoning code. But because that second accessory structure meets the main setbacks, he can then convert that. He doesn't have to demolish that building. So we're not having to grandfather in and not performing use here. So the idea was to put that accessory structure, allow him to build a little bit higher, not up to 35 feet like a single family dwelling, but up to 25 feet. But then at that point, it needs to meet certain additional setbacks.
I understand the reasoning. Is anybody asking for this? Somebody wants to build?
There's one resident, and then once another resident saw the code being proposed, came out to the planning commission and said, I'm interested in doing something as well. So there's a few.
And the additional 5 feet is helpful for them?
The additional 5 feet helps them because it changes the pitch of the roof from having to go let's say you want to be in a tunnel kind of shop.
Sure.
Well, if you want to have a wide shop and you want to have 10-foot ceilings, well, to get that pitch to where it's only 20 feet, you're almost building a flat roof, whereas another 5 feet gives you a more palatable pitch that looks a little bit better for the area. There is one area on that, one line on that code that I wanted to change. I saw it didn't get added. So if you pull up the code that's being proposed, it's under section C. The language that was being added says, an additional 5 feet in building height may be granted by the zoning administrator should the proposed accessory building comply with the building setback requirements of the main dwelling in the underlying zone. I wanted to add just some quick language that says, so that it would say an additional 5 feet in building height may be granted by the zoning administrator for lots exceeding the minimum zone square footage requirement by a factor of 2. You know, kind of spelling out that this is not something that every lot can do. So Planning Commission reviewed this code and they didn't see anything with it. They looked at it for a few months and they liked the compromise. Originally you were considering doing some sort of formula where for every additional foot in height you had to go back an additional 2 feet. But it just seems a lot cleaner to say if you're gonna go up to 25 feet, you need to be minimum here.
The Planning Commission have any other concerns?
No, sorry. Because that was pretty simple. And I assume that the resident that originally wanted it to be done for 3 years.
Does it have something? All right. Let's see, what about number 15? I don't think there was one that we haven't covered yet. Charlotte's not 17. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so as part of the commercial development that the city's working on with the shop properties on the city's 9 acres, we've seen that they are proposing a storage unit facility as well as an athletic facility on the eastern half of the city's 9 acres. Currently, neither of those are allowed in the retail zone. But something that we've heard consistently from developers, and not just the open shop property, but a number of potential buyers that we have on that piece, as well as people with the city sought out opinions on, such as people from Boyer Group, Salt Lake, and just call up the commercial bankers. They all looked at the back portion of that piece and said, your front is very good. Anything that fronts on 4800 should be retail. You'll find tenants. It's the back piece that you're going to struggle with. So they've come in and they're proposing a piece of place, as you saw. You see the Planning Commission packet as well from last week, they're proposing indoor climate control storage units as well as it's an athletic training club. It's not like a gym, not like a law center, but more like a private gym for one-on-one teams to practice. Anyway, the athletic gym is allowed in the mixed use zone, which on your maps, is this blue zone here. But the storage units are not allowed anywhere. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to work with the developer to allow for the gym to be over here as well as the storage units to be over here. But my big concern, and I know that the mayor had a similar concern, was that if you carve out language saying that, well, you can put your storage units in the mixed use zone, we'll just give you a conditional use, well, then what happens if this becomes storage units? We don't want that. So what we did was we were proposing to create an overlay zone where we're combining these two zones, the red and the blue, and making this purple strip here that's about 300 feet deep. Uses that are shown as permitted or conditional in the red zone and the blue zone would be the same thing in this zone. So the athletic club that is a conditional use in the blue zone would still be a conditional use in this purple zone. But that doesn't answer the question of storage units, because we still don't want that to be a conditional use here. So what we're saying is, as part of this code, and you can read it in the packet, but by creating this overlay zone, we're creating basically a mixed-use district, So the language we're stating says that the retail mixed-use overlay zone is intended to provide a buffer zone between residential properties and commercial development, while at the same time allowing for additional flexibility for development. Uses in either the retail or mixed-use sub-districts are allowed per classification in section 3 of this title, and then certain uses identified in the table as being designated as conditional uses in the retail mixed-use overlay zone, this purple zone, shall only be allowed in the overlay portion of the zone and not in the individual sub-districts. So that's the, so then if you go to the table, you see the storage units, it's IDACO 6375, and they're shown as conditional uses in both of these zones, but it's only allowed in this purple zone. So that, in that way, I think that we're kind of, I don't want to say pigeonholing, but we're kind of cornering them into a certain portion of the city where we're saying it's okay to have it here, but we're avoiding the unintended consequences of allowing it everywhere.
So I have a question on that one. I know these four digit codes, 6375, are they coming from international building code?
That was a bit of a challenge to find where those originally came from, but we did. And it's from the same, I can send you the document.
I can't remember, I know we talked about it.
They're unique to Utah. So the American Planning Association has their own land use code classifications, which these are not yet. So Murray City, Provo City have a similar set of codes, which after kind of doing a quick check of our codes versus their codes, we're using the same codes as about like Provo and Murray.
So can cities have their own? Okay, this is where I'm going with this. This is why. Is it says warehousing or storage services, and if it's possible, if it's legal, I would like to really narrow that down to say indoor climate controlled storage facility. So it cannot be outdoor. It's really narrowing it down to just what we're approving.
I think that's good. I think that's a fair point. And Joel might have more to add to that when he gets here, but I don't see why not calling it out indoor climate controlled storage.
I want it to be very narrow to that one thing that we're comfortable with.
You know, and then, because you see there's a paragraph, parentheses there, only allowed in the retail mixed use overlay.
Right.
You could even go so far as to add more restrictive language. Because that's the idea, is that we want to avoid some of these unintended consequences.
Right.
That really could creep up if we're not careful.
Right.
Were they proposing a few exterior storage?
They were.
That's not what they're showing now.
It's not what they're showing now. I'd like to keep them indoor.
I do, yeah. I like that a lot.
I think that if there's a market for the outdoor, there's a market for the indoor. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a, you can get some, but not all of what you want.
Yeah.
This city, I feel, should make a really good faith effort in trying to work with the developer on a difficult piece.
So that would be my only recommendation there, is really narrowing that language to be specifically that one type of storage.
I think that's fair, because that's what we're talking about specifically. Okay. Are there any questions about that overlay zone?
What's our timeline? Do we now have any idea?
That's a good question.
That's probably a real estate executive session discussion.
Well, I can report that the Planning Commission did approve a concept plan last week. That was a public meeting. But there was some real, you can just tell this by listening to the audio from the Planning Commission, there's some real hesitancy on the Planning Commission's part where I feel like they brought up concerns that I feel like it may be a little bit premature at this point. Because a concept plan is really supposed to be a high-level idea of what the development would look like. It's in no way tied, in no way is the city or developer tied to what's presented in a concept plan. When you get into the preliminary plan of any development, that's when you start getting into the engineering, you start looking at your utilities, your grading, your traffic patterns, your traffic counts, and even what your uses are, and that's when the city can expect a certain product and the developer can expect certain rights. Well, that's not the concept plan. I felt like sometimes some of the discussion got a little bit into the preliminary stage when it should have been staying in the conceptual stage. So we met with the developer, and I think that there's a plan, and I'd probably be a little more comfortable discussing that in closed session, given that it's a real estate issue, I think the mayor's saying. But that's all public meeting I just reported, so but there is a plan.
And how does he do that? Okay, thank you. It's a good person. Let's see, Greg, can we talk about golf course rates?
Sure. We are proposing to increase the fuel rates. That's only on green style car lines. We should have last year's rates versus the proposals. Questions now? This has more to do with just letting the cars on the fleet.
We haven't raised rates in 5 years.
It's been 5 years. Yeah, and I actually did a little analysis today with a lot of the other forces around, and we're right on with everybody for the most part.
That was my question. How do we compare?
Yeah, we've been below everybody. Okay. Now we're going to come up basically to the same level. Some are cheaper in some areas, and some are significantly higher. The only one I could not get was Sydney Ridge. Their website's down, but everything else I got, and it's very, very comparable. The only difference is going to be, as you saw, was 9 holes a day, was just a $2 increase, and the other one was a $1 increase on weekends, 9 holes, and then weekend. 18 holes. Weekday, 18 holes stay the same. And really, what we're trying to do with some of those, if you look at the pricing, doesn't really go why or reason. Reward those who are going 18 holes. So the rates obviously are a little bit less for 18 versus 9. We want to see the beauty of the course.
You projected how much of the memory.
You know, that's a variable, and it really depends, because you'll still have like 2-for-1 coupons here and there, and coupons, but it will significantly raise, which will help us with our budget for the company. And as I put on there too, because we were going to go with the agreement with the PC Links, but we chose not to do that, because we didn't make money ourselves. Easy Links was we were going to basically allow them to have one tea time a day between 12 o'clock and 2 o'clock, which were slower times. And in return, they would give us a dollar amount, but we really feel like we can actually make more money ourselves doing that. And then they were going to access some of the custom files that we just weren't comfortable with, so we just chose not to do that. That was going to help with it. This will now actually help us increase our revenue.
So you opened for a little bit, right, in January. How did the cards do?
They're great. Yeah, we had a lot of really good feedback. Yeah, a lot of good feedback. There was one thing in our last lease. There was one issue with the carts as they go down the bottom of the first hill where they get out on a couple of carts. They were supposed to do that before the carts came in here. But they've sent us a handheld device that we hooked up on the golf course and we fixed it ourselves. Very simple things. So, yeah, we're good. No complaints at all. Everyone's very happy with it. You are welcome to come out anytime. Anytime.
Greg, how many people will pay this trail fee?
You know, honestly, very, very few. There's only a couple people, and if you see people around in the neighborhoods more than they have golf carts out there, I can think of a couple of residents without saying names that come, that they have to pay that trail fee, but that's it. That's literally the people that bring their own carts here and just use our trails. They're not using our carts, we're using their own carts. That's the trail fee.
And they're not golfing. They're
golfing. Yeah.
Oh, they are
golfing. Yeah, so they just save, what is it, a buck or something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, more on 18 holes. But range balls, we didn't affect the range balls, any of that kind of stuff. We kept everything else the same. And again, there's a lot of variables out there, a lot of the courses out there on range balls. They're actually a lot, some of them are a lot more, some of them are right on the floor. One thing I really liked, Spanish Oaks, they're a city-owned course too. I printed theirs out, and it actually states on their rates fee that the ball rates have been approved by the Spanish Oaks City Council. I think that's something we can put on ours too, is all of our fees over time, and with this proposal, have been approved by our city council. So, thanks. It's okay. Thanks, guys. You just have to do it.
Any questions, Greg?
Thank you.
Such a simple. John, anything else you want to cover?
you want to give me 5 minutes on the Wardell subdivision?
Sure.
Just go over that real quick.
This is a home that's along Canyon Road, right by Box Up the Drive, ahead of the site. Mr. Wardell owns that piece that is, it's about an acre and a little bit over an acre, 1.2 acres of 1 acre. He's wanting to split this lot, and this is where I say he's got an existing building that he, an outbound building that's been an accessory building that he wants to then retrofit according to the building code, but have that be the home that's for sale. So he's splitting the lot, and this is partly in conjunction with the Canyon Road project, because by splitting the lot, there's certain requirements that need to be performed by the developer. So if you look at page 3 of the development packet, you can see that he's putting in curb gutter sidewalk along Canyon Road. Either he's putting it, or is it the Canyon Road project's putting it in?
County's putting it in.
So either way, it's probably, we would require that of him if had he been doing this himself, but the county's looked at the reward. He's paying them for it.
Yeah.
Okay. But they're putting it in as part of the project. It's shown in the plans.
I was going to say, yes, then. We need to get
good for him. And so also he's worked with the county on the second driveway access for that home. You can see coming off of at just at the very end of that acceleration lane that the county's going to be installing. It's a really straightforward subdivision, especially given that the home is already there. But you can see why we want to put, when people want to have an accessory structure, we want them to meet, they're going to go higher, we want them to meet certain setback requirements. So if they do decide to retrofit it, it does meet minimum setback requirements for the zone. Past that, I mean, it's a really straightforward subdivision. I don't anticipate many hiccups on it. He will have to, you can see that there's not a garage, the driveway does lead to nothing, so he will have to have a garage built as part of the project, so there will be some expenditures on his part in retrofitting that building to meet both building and zoning requirements.
So will we have a timeline for him to meet that requirement?
Well, he'll as part of the building code, once he's got the subdivision approved, this subdivision, he'll submit building plans to the city, and that will be part of it.
He's going to sell us.
He's in the R1 15,000 zone, so he has a minimum square footage of 15,000 square feet. See that he is beyond that. So the small spot there is 15,963 feet. Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. And at this point, he'll based on your decision tonight, he'll move on to the final commission to come back to you next month.
Is he one of the ones that will benefit from the sewer line going in? Any questions?
Is there any reason, any concerns?
I don't have any. Jeff, do you have any?
I would just include in the development agreement that it does include language that he needs to upgrade existing buildings to be code.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And we're only talking though the new building.
Correct.
Not the old home that's already has a COO.
Yes, it'd be the new lot.
Okay. Yeah. I think that'd be a fair reference. I think it retrofits in our home as well. Past that, I don't know if anything else is pretty straightforward, but not when you get the idea of the motion. Then we'll be looking for that as the building project. So anything else?
So, all right, council,
someone wants to
make a motion to adjourn work session. I move that we adjourn the work session.
Motion by
Councilmember Miller, is there a second? Second from Councilmember Anderson, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, so we are adjourned and we will be back here at 7 o'clock.